Good morning, honorable members and members from the officials from the Department of Home Affairs. Welcome to this session with the Select Committee on Security and Justice. Today we'll be dealing with, we'll be getting briefings on two bills. The one is the Border Management Authority Bill, and the second one is on the Civil Union Amendment Bill. Following the briefings, our members will then, after deliberations, also look into the various bills that are before the committee in terms of procedures, especially in terms of how we take processes forward. Once again, DG and officials from the Department of Home Affairs, I should just welcome you, but also indicate to honourable members that we did receive an apology from the minister, who unfortunately is out of the country. But given that this is just the first briefing in terms of the bill, we thought there's nothing wrong with that if the minister's not present. But I must raise, DG, that I think in our next engagement, especially in terms of this bill, we would likely see the minister present. Okay. Thank you. Our members, you have a program in front of you, and in terms of apologies, we've received two from members. It's Honourable Mitsalakis and Honourable Sisler, and Honourable Goya, as well as Honourable Zadu. There are four apologies from members. I'm not sure if there are any others. But seeing that there are none, maybe then just to speak on the time issue, because I see Honourable Mtetwa is raising it, as well as Honourable Fayela raised it yesterday. We intend, the time for this meeting, we intend to finish by 12. So if everything goes according to plan, we expect to reach that time. Okay, but we'll bear that in mind as well. Okay, I just ask members to do a quick round of introduction, this being the first engagement with the Department of Home Affairs. I probably didn't tell you, but my name is Sheda Sheikh, and I'll be chairperson of this committee. Anwar Mteta.
Thanks, Chair. My name is Enoch. Come from paper then.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. My name is Cindy Gamola from Mpumalanga Province.
Good morning. My name is Isaac Mbulelo Siliego from the Western Cape.
Good morning, everybody. Chairperson. My name is Simon Paella from KwaZulu-Natal.
Thank you. Maybe I can hand over to you, DG, from your side, if you could please introduce yourself.
Chair and honourable members, good morning, and thank you very much for the opportunity for us to come here. My name is Tulane Mavuso. I am the Acting Director General of the Department of Home Affairs. I have my colleagues with me here. We might like them to introduce themselves before we can then do the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Good morning, Chairperson and honourable members. My name is Elroy Africa. I'm from Home Affairs. I'm the project manager for this Border Management Authority project.
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members. My name is Dion Erasmus. I'm the Chief Director of Legal Services in the Department of Home Affairs.
Good morning, honourable members. I'm Theatre Civil Manager from Home Affairs Legal Services.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Luvuyo Luphondwana, Parliamentary Service.
Catherine mentioned this earlier, but because we're also dealing with the Civil Union Amendment Bill, which is a private member's bill, we also have a legal representative, Ms. P. I forget your surname, Bikashi. Bikashi, maybe if you could introduce yourself as well as Ms. Isaacs.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to everyone. My name is Nolutano Bikashi. I'm the Parliamentary Legal Advisor. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am Sue and Isaac, also Parliamentary Legal Advisor. We'll be assisting the Committee of the Water Management Authority Board.
Okay, and then from the State Law.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, members. Good morning, everyone. My name is Yolande van Akhiersen. I'm with the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, and I'm a Principal State Law Advisor.
Okay, thank you for that. I think we also have two other honourable members from the NA, if I'm not mistaken. Could you please welcome and please introduce yourself.
Good morning. Thank you, Jefferson. My name is Joe McGlua, Northwest National Assembly.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Adrian de Ritz from the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs.
I take it both of you are from the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. Provinces only work in the National Council of Provinces, not in the NA. Well, on a lighter note, but anyway. DG, I think as I've indicated that we do have some time constraints, and I've spoken to Mr. Africa. He did indicate that it could take him between 20 to 30 minutes to do this presentation. I'll allow that also because it would be the first presentation to members of this committee. But in essence, DG, and in line with the resolution of the House yesterday, all bills, this bill together with the Civil Union Bill has been revived. And in essence, the House has also taken into cognizance the work that has been done to date on the bill. So the intention of our engagement going forward is that so that we as a committee in the sixth parliament get up to speed in terms of where the fifth parliament left the bill. So in today's session, as you've indicated to yourself, it is largely to take us through the bill so we become familiar with the bill, but also to deal with other procedural issues in terms of there were issues raised by the Select Committee on Social Services and how far the department had gone in terms of those issues. Thank you, DG. Over to you.
Chairperson, thank you very much. With that, I think what we are going to try and do is just to give members a bit of background on the bill itself and obviously updates in relation to the establishment process for the Water Management Authority. But I would not waste time, rather request the project manager, Mr. Africa, to lead with the presentation, and then members will then engage with it so that we are able to stick within the time allocated. Thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson and members. So the purpose of this presentation is to provide that background and update on the BMA establishment process, and then also specifically to provide an overview of the BMA Bill 2016 as approved by the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. So the outline of the presentation covers these five areas, and Chairperson, I'll do my best to comply with the time frame. I will not speak to all of the details, but at least I'll comment on every single slide in one way or another. So by way of background, border management is not an exclusive South African phenomenon. It's a global function that is exercised by sovereign states, and typically border management challenges include things such as criminality, technical violations of countries' laws, transnational organized crime, terrorism, and just overall threats to the integrity of border management of a particular country. The map of the globe just gives an indication of migration movements globally, and the dark colors indicate between the years 2013
where there have been increases in migration movement. So what is border management? Typically around the world, when we talk about border management, it covers immigration control, customs control, border safeguarding, inspection of plants, plant products, border policing, inspection of animals, animal products, human health, and also the necessary infrastructure to support border management. In the context of our continent, South Africa is impacted on by at least some of the issues flagged on the slide. Top left-hand corner, migration on the continent affects border management in South Africa. The state of infrastructure on the continent also affects border management in South Africa because it enables the flow of legitimate goods but also illicit goods. The physical footprint of natural resources on the continent also impacts on border management because, again, this can be used for good or bad intentions. The spread of disease hotspots on the continent and also piracy around the coast, all of these things impact on our country in one way or another. When we talk about border management in South Africa, what are we talking about? Basically, we're talking about land, air, and sea borders. When it comes to our air borders, we've got quite an extensive airspace that we need to manage. Over 1.2 million square kilometers, we have a land borderline. Of over 4,400 kilometers, we have a maritime coastline of over 3,900, and we share borders with six neighboring countries, and there are at least 35 undesignated border crossings. Formally, we have 72 ports of entry in South Africa. These are the designated places where people and goods may legally enter and depart the country. And these ports of entry fall into three categories, land, air, and sea. And they are shown by the different colors. Some of the challenges that typically confront us as a country with regard to the three domains, air, sea, and land. In the air domain, we know that as a country we have limited surveillance capability. In other words, we are not able to 24 hours a day, 365 days a week, monitor the entire airspace of the country. We don't have the capability to do all of that. When it comes to the maritime environment, we know we have an extensive maritime jurisdiction extending from the coast of Namibia, right down past Cape Town, all the way up to Mozambique. We've got that extensive jurisdiction. And we also have large volumes of ships and cargo that pass through our waters and also through our maritime ports of entry. Through the land ports of entry, over 40 million people enter and depart in South Africa annually through the 72 ports of entry. But we also have informal border crossings, as I referred to earlier, at least 35. And also our infrastructure is inadequate, talking about border patrol roads, fences, and so on. So those are just some of the key challenges. From a government point of view, from a state point of view, what have we done to secure our borders? So if you zoom into item C on this slide, since 1994, government has put in various committees and structures to try and coordinate all the different organs of state that have got responsibilities in the border management environment. We have immigration, home affairs, Department of Agriculture needs to control plant products, animal products, we've got customs, we have border police, we have port health. So since 1994, the question has been how can we coordinate all of these role players? So those are some of the committees and structures that we've established. If we go to the last item on the slide, in 2013, Cabinet took a decision to say that this form of coordination is not sustainable. In fact, they said this approach to border management has failed, and it is precisely against that background. 2014-15, we did an assessment of how many officials work within the border environment in South Africa, and we estimated that about 8,891 officials from the Department of Health, SARS, Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, SAPS and Health work at the country's 72 ports of entry. But what was important about this approach is that it was characterized by different conditions of service and remuneration. All these different organs of state were implementing at least 58 pieces of legislation. They don't necessarily have the same priorities. They don't have similar tools of trade. Not all their systems are automated, and there's limited information sharing, and we don't have a single command and control. All of this has got negative consequences, which include the non-alignment of our work in the border environment, ineffective facilitation of the movement of people and goods, compromised joint operations, ineffective utilization of public resources due to limited information sharing. We also have high levels of transgressions in some instances in the border environment, a higher volume of illegal goods entry in the country, corruption, undocumented foreigners entering the country, and also the silo approach. So those are some of the problems of fragmentation. So again, it is against that background that government took a range of decisions. In 2009, former President Zuma announced that we would be establishing this BMA. In 2013, Cabinet took this formal decision to establish this BMA. One important matter coming out of that decision is that Cabinet said that this establishment of the BMA should be premised on the transfer or ceding of functions from these relevant organs of state to the BMA. And also in that decision, Cabinet gave Home Affairs the responsibility to lead the establishment of the BMA. In 2014, Cabinet approved a vision for the BMA, and then a year later in 2015, Cabinet approved a bill for the BMA. So some of the important principles that inform the bill that we are introducing to the committee today, we are saying that in our view, this BMA must be outcomes-focused. It must attempt to balance the facilitation of legitimate trade and travel while simultaneously addressing security challenges. This BMA must be a single implementation entity responsible for border law enforcement. We're also saying this BMA must assume control over all ports of entry and borderline functions. It must be established as a command and control organization, and a basket of border law enforcement functions need to be ceded or transferred to the BMA. We're also working on the concept of frontline integration. In other words, at ports of entry, all the officials from different organs of state need to be transferred and amalgamated into the BMA and become employees of the BMA. And lastly, we're saying the BMA must also establish what we call a national targeting center. This will basically be an intelligence and information hub that will assist us to identify risks in the border environment. Also, the BMA must have its own organizational culture and identity and conditions of service. It must also be responsible for all infrastructure in the border environment, and it must promote this paradigm of integrated border management. So in summary, the vision of the BMA is that it will have a border guard, and this border guard will be responsible for border law enforcement. We are envisaging in the ideal state, roughly 15 years from now, we'll need about 21,000 employees for this BMA. They'll be implementing plus minus 58 pieces of legislation. It must be a command and control organ of state. It will be responsible for all ports of entry, land and maritime borders. And last but not least, it will be an armed organ of state. All of these things are catered for in the bill. By way of establishing the BMA, we have prepared a detailed document called a BMA roadmap. And this roadmap outlines a number of phases that will characterize the establishment of the BMA. Unfortunately, we are still in phase one, which is called the pre-establishment phase. Once the legislation is passed, we will move into the get survival out. So in every single phase, we have indicated what needs to be done, what the time frames are, and what the physical footprint of the BMA should be over this period. In terms of process, what have we done to date? This slide summarizes, I won't get into the slide, it summarizes the important milestones since 2009, and it takes us right on top to the NCOP September-October 2019. So we've explained that in 2015, Cabinet approved the BMA bill. We have had initial consultations at the Public Service Council Bargaining Chamber. We've been to NEDLAC for 6 months. We've had bilateral meetings with both labor and organized business, and we also work very closely with the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. All of those consultations have led to improvements and revisions in the BMA bill that is currently before the House, and it deals with some of those matters on that slide. It's important to note, Chairperson and honorable members, in NEDLAC, there were only three matters that we could not find agreement on. The first matter pertained to the establishment of the BMA as a Schedule 3A national public entity. Organized labor in particular, they felt and still feel that the BMA should be a government department. They believe that by establishing the BMA as an entity, we are privatizing government. Our view, of course, is different. We are saying the BMA will be a full organ of state. It will be regulated by the PFMA, and it has not been taken outside of the public service. The second area of disagreement was regarding the security vetting process. NEDLAC made it quite clear that this objection was not unique to the BMA. They had a general problem within government around vetting, and they thought they would just re-emphasize the fact that vetting processes take very long within government, and they don't want that process to apply to the BMA. Finally, routine searches, organized labor, organized business felt that they did not agree with the approach to the routine searches for the BMA. They felt that we should regulate how searches should take place much more tightly. We are of the view that for the BMA to be functional and effective, it must have the mandate to undertake a routine search within its jurisdiction at any time as it deems fit. So those were the only three areas of disagreement. In 2016, the bill was introduced into Parliament. The Portfolio Committee made a number of amendments after the bill was introduced. Chairperson, I won't go through all of the amendments. You can see on slide 26 and 27. And of course, as a department, we have really appreciated these amendments, and we see them as enhancing the bill. So on slide 28, in June, the National Assembly adopted the BMA bill, and it was transferred to the NCOP. And this is where it currently is. The last committee meeting of the Select Committee on Social Services took place in the Fifth Administration. It took place in April last year. And there were three resolutions that came out of that meeting. The first one was that as a department, we had to submit proposals on some amendments that were made by the committee. And we duly submitted those amendments, and our legal colleagues are here to deal with that, again, Chairperson, if required. Secondly, the committee directed that some organs of state need to come together and find common ground on some issues that they felt were not consensual between some of these departments. And lastly, the committee directed that the Ministers of Finance, Police and Home Affairs should come to a follow-up meeting to assist in finalizing the bill. So the one particular issue, Chairperson, where we could not find consensus on the bill was a matter raised by National Treasury and the South African Revenue Service regarding their view that SARS and the customs function should be excluded from the BMA. So that matter has been under deliberation for some time within government. We are now able to report, and I'll come back to this point later, we are now able to report that the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Home Affairs now reached consensus on this matter of SARS, and the proposal will be submitted to this committee. Chairperson, if I can come to the bill itself, so what we do in this section of the presentation, and with your permission, I'm not going to go through everything, I'll just highlight a couple of matters, but this bill has got 11 chapters, 41 clauses, and there are no schedules. In the very first bill that we had a few schedules, but they have subsequently been omitted. Chapter 1 deals with definitions, the application and object of the Act. Chapter 2 deals with the establishment functions and composition of the BMA. Chapter 3 deals with matters pertaining to the Commissioner and Deputy Commissioners. Chapter 4 pertains to matters regarding the appointment and functions of officials of the BMA. Chapter 5 deals with the employment terms and conditions of these officials. Chapter 6 deals with the powers of entry, search, seizure, and arrest and detention. Chapter 7 deals with funds and immovable property. And Chapter 8 deals with a few governance matters regarding committees and implementation protocols. Chapter 9 deals with a few general matters, and Chapter 10 deals with transitional provisions, and in the last Chapter 11 is the short title and the commencement. So, Chairperson, I will not go through the details, but I will just maybe comment at least on one or two slides. So, this bill is tagged as a Section 75 bill, and the rationale for that is that this bill does not place any legislative obligation on provinces. But, of course, the bill is in the NCOP for input, but the National Assembly will be making its final deliberation and decisions on the bill. We decided to call the BMA an authority because we think that this term is appropriate given the fact that the BMA will be central in asserting the sovereignty of the state and the authority of the state within the border environment. The long title is there for reading. It gives an overview on what this bill focuses on, honourable members. The outcomes of this bill is really meant to contribute to socioeconomic development, efficient border law enforcement, the prevention of various problems like smuggling, illegal cross-border movement, environmental, resource depletion, and also protecting our country from various diseases. We have a section on definitions. The one definition on border law enforcement is quite important. So we explain in the land border, it basically we are saying the border law enforcement area is an area of 10 kilometers from the internationally recognized borderline into South Africa. So that's the land borderline definition. When it comes to maritime, our oceans and sea, it's also 10 kilometers, but that the maritime borders extend 10 kilometers landwards inside the country. And then, of course, into the maritime environment, it extends right to the end of what is called the exclusive economic zone. Again, Chairperson, we can come back and explain some of these technicalities. So this BMA Act, we make it quite clear in Clause 2, it applies to the BMA. The object of the Act is to promote integrated border law enforcement. We have a provision for the establishment of this authority. It will be a Schedule 3A national public entity in terms of the PFMA. We also outline the functions of the BMA. In summary, the function of the BMA is to give effect to border law enforcement. That is the concept that we use, border law enforcement. And, of course, we explain what that means. The BMA will be comprised of the Commissioner and Deputy Commissioners and the Border Guard and support staff. We make provision for the appointment of the Commissioner and two Deputy Commissioners, so the BMA makes a provision for that. And we speak about the qualifying conditions. We talk about the terms of office. The Commissioner and the Deputy Commissioners will have a term of office for 5 years. And we also stipulate the age limit of 65 when they need to depart. We make provisions for removal of a commissioner and a deputy commissioner. We also deal with the conditions of service, and we say that this will be determined by the president after consultation with the minister, and also the Minister of Finance will also have some role in this. We deal with the functions of the commissioner and the deputy commissioners. We also deal with matters pertaining to delegations. This is quite appointed and we say that the commissioner must determine and implement a uniform recruitment procedure when persons are appointed to the fixed establishment. We also make provision for the appointment of what is termed commissioned officers, and again we can explain what that means. This term becomes important given the fact that the BMA will be an armed organ of state. We then spell out the duties and functions of the BMA, of Border Guard officials. We talk about the terms and conditions of employment. We deal with limitations of rights in respect of the Constitution. We also deal with chapter clause 18 is quite important because this is really the essence of what the BMA will do. It will have the power to entry, search, seize and arrest and detain where appropriate. So this clause is quite important. And of course, linked to that is a matter of routine searches that I refer to. Also, we're making provisions to go aboard a maritime vessel, the arrest of people and goods. Clause 2 speaks to the issue of funding, and we're basically saying that the BMA will primarily, if not exclusively, get its funding from Parliament and from government grants. So that's quite an important point. Immovable property. We say that the commissioner, with the minister's approval, may acquire and dispose of immovable property in order to give effect to this bill. When it comes to matters of governance, the bill makes provision for the establishment of an interministerial committee that will be chaired by the Minister of Home Affairs, and this ministerial committee will be chaired by, will be supported by a border technical committee of directors general. And they will do all the technical work and they will make proposals to the Interministerial Committee. We make provision for advisory committees. We make provision for implementation protocols. The matter of delegations is important. Also, certain decisions may be appealed. So we will make set aside a procedure for that. In Clause 30, we also talk about the process for determining and designating ports of entry. We stipulate that the BMA must provide annual reports to Parliament and to the Minister. We deal with matters of exemption for paying toll fees in the course of its work. We deal with matters of confidentiality, liability, offences and penalties. The BMA Act will definitely need regulations, so there are quite a few areas in the bill where we indicate where these regulations will be required. Then in Chapter 10 on transition, quite important, we speak about the need and the necessity to transfer employees from one organ of state, various organs of state to the BMA. And one of the things we say there is that when this transfer takes place, such an official's conditions of service or remuneration may not be negatively affected. That's the essence of that clause. We deal with the assets liabilities of the BMA. We also once again deal with the issue of ports of entry and exit. We also explain what we mean by recognized trade unions. And then, of course, the final clause just deals with the short title. So that's really a whirlwind overview of the content of the BMA. So our view, Chairperson and honorable members, is that we think the BMA will really have benefits for travelers and traders and customer efficiencies. We think it will enhance security and overall management of the border environment. We think that the BMA will assist in sharing information and identifying risks. It will also improve and optimize port operations. We think it will also assist in more effectively utilizing our different resources as the state, because right now they are spread across different organs of the state. We also think it will improve the sterility of our ports of entry and will assist us with this notion of command and control and streamlined authority. So, Chairperson, coming towards the end, I've indicated that the Ministers of Home Affairs and Finance that we have interacted with each other, and this is the clause that we are intending to formally introduce into this committee. The essence of this clause says two things. The first thing this clause says that, or proposes, is that this piece of legislation should not apply to SARS or customs functions at all. So in other words, they will remain an independent organ of state. And the second thing that the govern the way in which they need to work together. But Chairperson, we can come to the legalese and the actual crafting later. Chairperson, here we are just indicating some of the benefits we believe. If we have consensus on this, it will really assist us in fast-tracking the finalization of this bill. And again, just to make the point, number three, SARS will retain its full mandate on all matters pertaining to customs and revenue generation. The BNA will simply enter into this cooperation relationship with them. Chairperson, by way of way forward, if I can jump to number two, the department is currently working on a Section 797 presidential proclamation. In our view, this proclamation will go hand in hand with this act. The purpose of this proclamation is to transfer functions from these other organs of state to the BMA. So in other words, the proclamation will say functions from the Department of Health, such as Port Health, must be transferred to the Minister of Home Affairs. Functions around border policing will need to be transferred from the Minister of Police to the Minister of Home Affairs. And we go through all those affected organs of state. And then in addition to that, we will obviously be working on the regulations. So, Chairperson, that is our submission. The final point we are simply making is that we are working on an implementation plan, and we are quite keen to be ready for rollout of the BMA in April next year. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Africa. DG, do you have anything to add? Thank you for that in-depth presentation. I'm going to request honourable members, if you have any questions of clarity in terms of the presentation, you are free to raise it now. If I can get an indication, besides honourable Teatua, Sileku. Okay, maybe we'll just start with the two and then, okay, and with Nita, with Zandanella. Okay, maybe everybody can have a bite. I'll start with Honorable Fayela, and we'll just...
Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the briefing that you are giving us. Intensive one. I'm trying to check here, Honourable Chair, before this bill introduced, how were we coping in our country? How were we doing things as far as the borders are concerned? But it looks like now we are starting a new thing altogether. Before, how was it?
Sorry, members, I suggested we just go. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Chair. Mine, Chair, is just in terms of when it was, I believe it was accepted by the National Assembly after the third attempt. And I just like to know, in terms of the ones that actually were against the bill, was there any party that was against the bill? And what has been the reason for the particular party to be against the bill? And have their concerns been taken into cognizance, or was it just wash away? That is the first question. And the second question that I would like to ask is that the previous committee had said that you need to engage your department of with SAPS, National Defense Force, and National Treasury. But when you listen to the slides or the presentation, find just emphasis in terms of the department and SARS, and I'd just to know in terms of the other ones, have there been any interactions, and were you able to reach a common ground in terms of that? And also in terms of this sixth parliament, specifically this select committee, is there going to be another window open for public participation pertaining to this particular bill? Thank you.
Just in relation to your last question, I think it wouldn't be for the session. We will deal with it later. Okay.
mention about 21,000 employees that must be recruited, if I'm correct. But I just need clarity with regard to, in the current arrangement in our borders, what's going to happen to those employees there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. In your presentation, I don't see the SANDF, but when you go to the border, there are SANDF in the borders. What are their functions? And the SANDF, and my question is, they are not having sufficient budget. What is happening? And my other question is, in the last parliament, fifth parliament, we visited the borders, and there were a lot of confusion there, because there were a lot of, like, scanners. When you ask who's buying scanners in borders, they say it's SARS. But there were a lot of confusion. Can they explain everything? What is it going to happen now? Thank you, Chairperson.
Partly covered on the issue of the departmentary cooperation. Currently, there are a number of cross-flow matters within our own department. I just now think I heard about this VMA that would be going to face some resistance to the other department to say now we are crossing into our space. Particularly the defense and SARS, and I'm concerned about SARS not wanting to be part of this, because most of this work is what SARS should have been doing. My second point is that, what is the views of the ministry concerned around this matter? Are they also coming together? Because more than anything, we need some cooperation for the BMA. If they would have right to seize and arrest, and those parts, you touch the other department to seize the goods and fetch. These are the other departments, like your police, that have those authority currently. So I just want you to explain for me that one. The other one, Chair, the issue of transfers of employees from the other organs of the state. I'm very skeptical when you say that they might not be disadvantaged. You will find somebody who has been a brigadier from a police want to cross over into this BMA. It's part of the department. No, I've seen a post there. And his rank was a little bit higher, maybe, than what on your new structure will this game be. Would you say to that person, because you were brigadier or you were in that rank from the police, now that you are here, we must inherit your salaries and your benefit? Then is it not going to cause, then in your salary structure, some gaps? Because other people will come with their salary position, and others need to be employed on the new current position, that is the structure that you have defined. May I get some clarity there as to how that can be done? Then the last, Chair, is the issue of, I'm looking at this program, it's a very good program, and if it can be pushed, it will assist the country and everyone else to alleviate a number of problems. But my challenge is, Chair, we are still in phase one. And you are expecting that by next year we will be really starting running up and running on this matter. Is that practical? Yes.
And
when
you just
First, I want to apologize for arriving late, Chair. It's a delay from the bus, 8 o'clock bus at Akashi, due to technical fault. To
So my question, Chair. One, I heard the presenter saying there's still matters unresolved between the ministries, the SARS and the Home Affairs. And I'm asking myself, if there are still matters that are unresolved between the two ministries, why are we discussing the bill? Because in my view, those things that are unresolved, they have implications in what we are discussing. So I need clarity on that. My second point is on the issue of Easter. Partly, Honorable Zandamela touched on it, but I would want to be more precise in terms of understanding we have 72 posts, and currently, you are saying in your presentation you will need about 21,000 staff members. What we want to know, how many staff members do we have now? Because it will help to understand if there will be no labor challenges. And again, Chair, I've got an issue which they will pardon me if it doesn't fall under their scope, but because you're talking of border management, I think they do have some stake in it. You know, there's this thing, the workers that are working in the sea, they complain about being seriously abused because of our border legislation, which governs differently from the land and to the sea. So I want to know, can this legislation be able to address that? Because labor laws are not applicable when they get into the sea. So just please help me on that. It may happen it fall under the scope of Department of Labor, but because we talk of borders, was it has something to do with borders when you get to the sea. We will discuss further when you respond. I can see that the faces are frowning. Now, on your tagging, you are saying provinces are not obliged to carry out the BMA. What I would like to know, what then become the role of the province in all this? Remember, we are the house that represents provinces. So when we talk about this BMA, we must be accurate in terms of saying this is what national will be doing in your space, and Nina, you do not have anything to do with this BMA. I'm happy that you have highlighted that you are recognizing trade unions, and there's also discussion between yourself and NADLAC about areas of dissatisfaction. And what I would like to know, out of the three areas that NADLAC has raised as a negative from their side, what then become the way forward so that when we implement this bill, we do not face resistance? Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Members. DG, maybe just from my side as well, while the expectation was that, and members have raised it, was that the Department of Home Affairs would meet with relevant other departments, being at the NDF, the Defence Force, SAPS, as well as Treasury and or SARS on certain matters, and notwithstanding the fact that you have an agreement with SARS on customs duties. Just in terms of the other departments, I was hoping that if you were here today making this presentation, you would have come to some kind of agreement on such matters. But there are issues that
they have raised with the committee previously. And I think some of it also relates to certain clauses within the bill. If we look at clause 18, which talks about powers of entry, search and seizure, these are also responsibilities of SAP. While you do speak about the presidential proclamation issue, the responsibilities within the Border Management Authority area, are these exclusive in terms of the current functions of SAP? Are they just exclusively going to be the responsibility of a Border Management Authority? I think you need to clarify that. And there's just one other issue which I think members also haven't raised. It relates to what was raised by the Defence Force around private airstrips. Well, obviously, there would be some level of entry of people as well as goods in terms of private airstrips along the borders. And how are these actually managed and how do they actually relate to the bill? Thanks, TG. Over to you.
Chair, I'm sorry that I arrived late. You know, there's something that is continuing to happen in our committee. Ministers are not attending the select committee meeting. So I think that thing must be very sharply with the ministry. If the minister is not available, the deputy minister must be present, especially when we deal with matters of this nature. Thank you.
I'm glad you started by saying you came late. But be that as it may, just around the issue of the tagging mechanism as well, because that is a parliamentary process, so you don't necessarily have to deal with that one. Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much for the questions from the members. Maybe let me start with the comment that the Chair has just made. There's been engagements between ourselves and the Defence Force, the police services, to an extent that with the police, we have a written agreement between ourselves on the issues that pertain to the bill. That's the one issue I would like to raise. Secondly, the police will continue to play their role, particularly where they are present within the border environment. Let me just explain. There are certain border or ports of entry that are located where there's police stations, for example. So the crime that would be happening in that environment, the police would still have to play that particular role. So that's the one issue that I want to raise. On the issue of the South African Defence Force, in the bill we're quite clear that the responsibility of the airspace will be retained and remain within the responsibility of South African Defence Force. That was a clear agreement also in that regard. So, but I'll ask Elroy to talk to the airstrips when he comes through. Then, Honourable Violet, let me say that currently, as we indicated, I think in slide 11, we indicated that since 1994, the issue of the management of border environment, one we formed something called 1996 Border Affairs Coordinating Committee, that was replaced by National Interdepartmental Structure, and then the one that lasted for a very long time was the BCOCC, for example, the Border Control Operational Coordinating Committee. At some point it was led by SARS. So with the formation of the Border Management Authority Project Office, the responsibility now lies with the BMA, where they are now managing or coordinating what you call an inter-agency clearing forum. Again, that's a structure that was created to manage the activities in the borderline. The issue of fragmentation is what we are raising here, is that when you do not have one command and control, you don't have the same standards, you don't have the same information, this is where you have problems in the border environment, because this one performed this function. Police do their own thing, Home Affairs do their own thing, SARS do their own thing, but it's in one environment. This is where we've now picked up that actually the lack of coordination is what results into border management becoming a very huge, serious issue. And we've looked at other countries, what they're doing, you know, in terms of coordinating the Canadian model. We've been there. look at what they're doing, Homeland Security in the US and other area countries in terms of how they're managing with the border management. Then on the other issues, Honorable Sileku, when the bill was passed, there were issues obvious that were flagged, but eventually there was an agreement within the National Assembly that the bill can be now be processed because there were differences were cleared, particularly it was in relation to responsibilities. And I think I've also talked about, I've answered you on the side Defence Force, but I think Elroy is going to add on that. And then, Honourable Zandamela, the issue relating to Section 1075, it's true, the NCOP is required, obviously, to give input into the legislation. Even though, Honourable Mesa, there are no functions that are going to be specifically performed by provinces because this is a national competence. So, but it becomes imperative that both houses of parliament are able to make a contribution to the legislation. Our view is that NCOP will be kept abreast with the developments as the issue of the PMA continues with their rollout. And on the issue of 21,000 staff members, we say over a period of 15 years. Currently, we do not have a PMA. We have a project office that is a staff complement of about like 5 people. And the 72 we are making a reference to is not the post. It's a port of entry. Our borders, the 72 ports of entry. So I thought I must just also clarify that particular issue. So the 21,000, Honorable Zandamela, that we are raising, we're saying that these are the people that are going to come from other departments. When we are seeding the functions, so obviously we'll be bringing, currently, as our example, for an example, there's over 700 police staff members who are responsible for the port of entry policing. So if SAPS actually now transfer those employees under the PMA, you would have then received 700 people who are going to be part of the 21,000 we're making reference to. We're not saying that there's going to be wholesale recruitment, but we're saying that there are warm bodies currently that are performing those functions, and those are the people that must be transferred to the border management authority because they are currently designated to perform those functions. But the only problem is that at our time, for example, there's a commander for SAPS, there's a commander for the immigration officials, there's a commander for and so forth. So those are the issues. And then I think Honorable Mula, you have raised the issue. She's out there. I've raised the same issue relating to SADF. I think she raised that question. And then also the issue around the visits that they had the last time around scanners. So I will explain that the infrastructure now obviously will be managed, under one house. Honorable Mutetua, the issue relating to resistance with other departments, that issue has been thrashed out. That's why I'm going to explain that. For example, when you form the border guard will be responsible for ensuring that people, for example, who trespass, who cross, in undesignated areas, the border guard is responsible for picking up those people, processing them in terms of violating the immigration laws. But that does not take away the responsibility of the Defence Force for them to ensure that they protect the sovereignty of the country against any military, aggression that might happen. Well, that is the responsibility of the Defence Force. But the BMA's responsibility is to ensure that every person who crosses must cross at a designated area, which is a port of entry. At the port of entry, also the BMA must ensure that you do not have the current situation where you go to Limbombo, for an example, just down the river there, someone is crossing there, and that Home Affairs has no jurisdiction over that particular responsibility. And then it becomes the responsibility of Defence Force. So the border guard will be responsible for that, to say, you can't cross here because they'll be manning the border line. But the Defence Force, their role is to protect the national security of the country against any military or called attacks and so forth. And then the ministers have come to a common understanding on this particular matter. Particularly, the last leg was around this issue of SARS. So there's been obviously a meeting of minds, and and there's been an agreement. That's why we're here today now, that there's been a clarity on that particular issue, even though as when we started this process, we did not envisage that we'll have that particular function, you know, divorced from the BMA. Around the issue of transfers of officials, no, what we are saying is that we do not want a person who would be in a, let's say, in a particular rank or a level, that when they're being transferred, and then they're actually demoted or given a lower rank. So we'll ensure that those are the things that we deal with. Because, for example, there will be some kind of synergy. We might not be a brigadier, you know, in the BMA, but you might be something else, but at the same level, you know, with the conditions that prevailed before, or even higher conditions that might actually be might prevail in the BMA. All that we are saying is that you do not want people to be worse off than when they were in the another organization. So that's what we're going to be looking out for. That is why also the issue relating to the conditions of service has been thoroughly threshed out in the legislation, so that we are able to protect those particular benefits that people will be bringing into them. And then around the program of the implementation, look, when the program of the implementation was drafted, obviously we had not envisaged that this will be here at this point. We had envisaged that legislation would have been long passed. So there might obviously be a need for us just to revise some of the timelines to be more realistic, as you are saying. You're quite correct in that particular observation. And then the issues, I think I've dealt with the issues on the issues of the unresolved matters that you're saying. At this point, we do not have unresolved matters, except what we have flagged as disagreements at NEDLEC. Obviously, at that particular platform, we agreed to disagree on the issue that my colleague has raised, the three issues that were at NEDLEC. But at the level of government, we've been able to clear out some of the issues relating to that. I've spoken about the issue of ports of entry 72. I'm not sure about the issue of workers working in the sea and the issue of labor laws. I will not be competent to deal with that particular issue at this point. And I'm saying the issue of provinces not carrying out the BMA functions because it's a national competence. Chair, I will leave the issues at that. I think I've tried to cover all the members, but I'll ask Elroy if there's anything, particularly on the issue of the strips and the subs road. Thank you very much, Chair.
No, thank you, Chairperson, and thanks, honourable members, for those questions. So I think the DG has really covered most of the issues. I'll just comment on one or two. And then, Chairperson, with your permission, our legal colleagues also just maybe want to clarify one or two things as well. So if I can just go through the list, starting on top, the first question was said, you know, before the bill, how are we coping, how are we managing? And I think the DG has indicated that right now we do not have a BMA. So right now we still have this fragmentation. We've got five different departments all working at the port of entry. We're working over each other, under each other, and we're trying to coordinate. And this is what the BMA is trying to address. So we had a slide in our presentation. It's this slide, slide 12 and slide 13. These are the challenges that we currently have right now before the BMA. So those two slides summarize what we have. There was another question, Chairperson, on which parties did not support the building in the National Assembly. I was just conferring with my colleague here. The two ones we can definitely recall, and other colleagues can come in, it was the Democratic Alliance and the EFF. They did not support the bill. We can check on other parties. I think that the DG has dealt with the issue of the number of employees, 21,000 in the long-term vision transfers. Let me just reiterate, right now as we are sitting here, we still think, because in 2014, about 4 years ago, we did a count, and that is the number that we could confirm. In other words, how many border officials across different departments are currently working at 72. And that is the number, just under 9,000. So we don't think that it has changed much as we are sitting here right now. If I can just add something about the SANDF, the DG is absolutely correct. We had engagements with the SANDF prior to bringing the bill to Parliament.
there were two things, big things, that we found agreement with on them. The first issue was that we had absolute agreement with them that the BMA will not impact or infringe or in any way affect their constitutional mandate to defend the country from military aggression. That is their exclusive responsibility, the SANDF. And in military terms, they refer to that as border protection. They use the term border protection. When the BMA comes, the BMA is going to do something else called either border control or border law enforcement. And I normally say this to make it simple. The BMA on the borderline will be responsible for catching goats and chickens and animals and trying to get people that are trying to cross the fence or come through the river. That is not an act of military aggression. That is border control. That's border law enforcement. So what that means in future, it means in future the SANDF and the BMA border guard will coexist, but they will perform different functions. So that is the agreement that we have. So that is agreement number one. Agreement number two, as the DG has said, is that in the bill that we have before us, we have put in the clause that says the airspace of the country will not be the responsibility of the BMA. It will remain the responsibility of the SANDF. So those are the two big issues that we thought we had reached an agreement on, Chairperson. I think there was one other issue I wanted to comment on. On the issue of workers' rights, Honourable Member at sea, again, like the DG, I'm not a labour person or legal person, but this much I know. When the BMA appoints its staff, and those staff are working in the maritime environment, it doesn't matter whether you're working at sea, whether you're working at the port of entry, whether you're working in the land environment, your conditions of service will be the same. The basic rights will be the same because you will be employed by the BMA. So that principle, I think, is at least a principle that we can confirm to the committee. Honourable Chairperson, these are my two last comments. On the issue of airstrips, private airstrips, right now as we are sitting here, it is the Department of Transport that is responsible. Department of Transport, together with its entities, they are responsible for regulating airstrips and airports and so on. So even this notion of a private airstrip, currently they formally give approval, it must meet certain conditions, whether it's a municipal airport or provincial airport or national airport, ultimately they are the authority. But I know, Chairperson, or I want to assume that your question is a little bit more deeper than that, because we know of scenarios where in deep rural areas, and we always give this example, where on farms, you know, there are these small light aeroplanes that just basically land on the farm and they take off. So the technicality now is, do you call that a formal private airstrip or not? And even within the Department of Transport, they can't answer that question definitively. So the question then arises, do you now regulate every piece of gravel road, because potentially that can be a kind of a land use. So I think, Chairperson, we can definitely get the Department of Transport to assist in clarifying that. What I can confirm is that the vision for the BMA is that we will have border guard officials on the ground, and they will be monitoring what is happening on the ground in the deep rural areas in the border environment. So at least that is the principle that we are working on. On the last issue, Chairperson, of exclusive responsibilities of the BMA versus SAPS, I think the DG has answered that. I want you to give another example. If you go to Oar Tambo International Airport, in future the BMA will be managing that. But let's assume somebody gets murdered there. Immediately, you're going to get the SAPS. Police are going to come into the port of entry and they will deal with that crime area there, and they will do all the things they need to do. So that is an example of how the BMA will not stop police from doing their function. The same will apply to the SANDF. If in the border environment, you know, a border guard is watching or trying to stop a person from coming through the river and trying to stop a goat or a chicken, but then they see a military vehicle coming from one of our neighboring countries, ask permission from the BMA Border Guard. They will come and they will do their work as the SANDF. So, Chairperson, what this means at an operational level, these implementation protocols become important because that will explain at the tactical operational level how we need to cooperate between the BMA and these other entities. Chairperson, I'd like to stop there. I know my colleagues just want to come in on one or two matters with your permission.
Thank you very much, Sheila. Now, just to add to what Mr. Elroy Africa said there, in the bill we're already making provision for implementation protocols. There's a specific clause dealing with that to deal with this last issue that is discussed, our engagement with SAPS, engagement with SARS, the engagements with SANDF, etc. So there is provision in the bill for that to be done. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, DG, and your team. I think all members, the department has covered, I think, most of our issues that relate to their responsibility. Are there any follow-ups? A note on the whole Mthethwa?
Yes, Chair. Mine is just simple, Chair. Now, I'm looking at this. I accept DG, to DG, the matter to say you'll be pulling on the current team that is there, men and women that are safeguarding our border. But I'm also thinking aloud here. You know, there are other departments that have been looking for tools of trade, which was not coming forth. You know, every department is cutting down budget. Others are really cut up to the bones. I'm looking again to this BMA. Like defense, they are talking about what you call these cameras that you fly these days, called drones. Awesome. I'm looking that you are not going to be in this entire borderline putting human beings walking along defense almost every day. Technology today give us an access to say you can just run those things right around, and that makes the job of the defense force to be even more efficient. That's where I'm thinking would there might be a problem. I'm happy that if the ministerial comes together and agree with this, it would be much better. Because who's supposed to throw in up those drones up to the air? The air defense and also the police and theirs. And you know, that's contradictory. These things really need to be managed properly. We will appreciate maybe at a later stage that to look into the entire organogram. This is the organogram. This is who is heading. And then I accept that the defense will continue doing its work as defense and the police in that entire. If we can see properly, take us through some of this organogram, can see how this thing is going to function without contradiction. Thanks.
Thanks, Chair. Mine is closer to the first point of Honorable Mthethwa. You are saying you'll be taking the staff that was already doing the work and be part of the BMA. What we want to know exactly is the staff that you are referring to. How many are they? The people that are currently working at the 72 points, so that you're able to make sense of the 21,000 that you're talking about, Queen BMA. Thank you.
Honorable Sileko.
Chair, thank you very much. I'm just a little bit worried in terms of whether there will be a budget, because currently in all departments, you find even Home Affairs, there is no budget to do, you know, even satellite offices, you know, there's no staff, there's no home bodies. And then we have this extreme amount of 21 over a period of years. How are we going to make sure when this bill is actually passed that whatever it's supposed to do, we are able to do it? Because honestly now, if you have to look in terms of what has happened in Joburg, xenophobic attacks, it's, these criminal elements, because everything happens there. And then, and I'm also worried about when we say we're going to take from this that department and then we're going to merge and we're going to have one entity, and then we are, because we have to say there are rotten tomatoes and potatoes within these departments that we ought to assist us. And the issue of vetting, of making sure that the staff that are going to be performing these responsibilities, you know, are like, are putting the country first, are people that are honest, because, you know, people are very corrupt, there's no integrity. Even SAPS, you know, we've heard what happened in Joburg. They take goods, and then the same goods that were confiscated, they are selling it. You know, so we are facing such issues. So the issue of vetting must really, really come strong, and making sure whoever is going to be given this responsibility of making sure that our borders are secured and they are safe, and whoever comes into our area is not here to break, but is here to break, to build this country, is taken care of. Thank you very much.
Honourable Zemina.
No, thanks, Chair. Actually, I'm happy to cover it again once more. Touched on the issue, not by you, whatever. Honourable Minister mentioned the issue of the current staff that is there. Terms of the new recruitment, how many will be recruited. And then obviously there's the introduction of this bill because we there's problems or there's challenges, hence this bill. But if we can perhaps be assisted with the actual operation so that we can have informed input with regards to this. As Honorable Sileku has mentioned that there are rotten potatoes, hence had challenges in those in the border. So if we can get the actual operation so that we can have, you know, informed inputs with regard to the operations. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Matishi.
No, thank you very much, honorable members. Maybe let me start with the question from Honorable Mteta around the issue of staff. It's true that you're not going to be using 100% warm bodies to even manage the borderline. As we have indicated, that the borderline, both the land and the sea, it's thousands of kilometers. So you need, obviously, to use technology to also manage borderline. You know, we'll have obviously designated, categories to say this particular borderline will manage utilizing drone technology or even, you know, consideration of electric fence, for an example, in those borders, in those areas where we know that they are a big problem. I mean, I will indicate to you that our biggest problem in terms of borderline is between ourselves and Zimbabwe and Mozambique, and those are the shortest one. You know, the longest one is between ourselves and Botswana, and we don't have much of issues there. So obviously we need to then the strategy of the BMA, we'll have to look into those things, but technology will play a central role in managing the borderline. The other issue that I think that's one that you have raised. We did say that in the presentation that in 1450 there were about 8,891 staff members that were performing this particular function from all government departments. Currently from Home Affairs, we just have about 1,300 migration officials who are manning our ports of entry, for all the 72. So with our Tambo sitting, we're just over 300. So I thought I would just mention that in relation to the staffing. The issue of the budget, Honorable Lucas just left, the issue of the budget, the functions, we always say that budgets follow functions. So the expectation that those departments, obviously they currently have allocations relating to the function that is performed in the border environment. So that's what we're going to be, you know, working on from all the government departments that will be transferring some of the funds. Around transferring rotten potatoes, one of the issues that I think we emphasize here is that the BMA will have its own organizational culture, its own procedures and processes in that, our expectation is that people, when they get transferred to the PMA, obviously have got to adhere to that particular organizational culture. The issue around certain potatoes, obviously you've got to deal with human nature. You are dealing with human nature here. But if you have processes in place, segregation of duties, the issues of discipline management and so forth, they are able to, and also the information around, you know, the functions that people are performing, you are able to have audit trails on transactions and all those things. So that's what kept the issue of corruption. But if you're not able to manage that particular end, you then run the risk, obvious, of rotten potatoes to continue to do most of the wrong things. Particularly when we raise the issue of fragmentation at points of entry as we speak, that fragmentation is that what creates vulnerability, is that what contributes to crime, to contraband, to illicit goods crossing into South Africa, because of that particular fragmentation, because of the lack of one command structure and the same set of rules. I mean, staff that reports to SARS, they've got their set of rules. Staff that reports to Home Affairs, a set of rules. So you are not able to manage the port of entry in a uniformed manner. So for us to be able to cap the issue of those particular crimes and activities in the port of entry, we need, obviously, to ensure that the organization operates under one. The issue of vetting is going to be central to that. That everybody who works in that particular environment obviously has got to be vetted in this regard. Oh, Honorable Zandamela, you're raising the issue of being assisted with actual operations. I'm not sure whether I understand the question, but our take is that once the PMA is formed, we will have a designated port manager in a port of entry, that all the functions, whether it's the port health, whether it's whether it's environmental officials, all those particular officials will be reporting to one particular structure so that you can be able to designate to execute those functions. You know, currently you have a situation where in the port of entry that certain officials, let's say health or SARS, they've got different accommodation of a better quality than the Home Affairs one, the better, you know, whether vehicle infrastructure or physical infrastructure. So our understanding is that when we create that environment at the ports of entry, they must be standardized to ensure that everybody. So that's the one issue. But in terms of the operations at the port, again, it's around how your port is designed. So for example, we are going to go to various models of managing our ports of entry, particularly land ports. Others will have what we call a one-stop border post. Obvious others will still have sterile areas where you have the other country operating on the other side, a sterile area, and then ourselves. So there's going to be various operations, but the biggest issue for us is that the PMA will be controlled by one port manager, obviously, except the custom function, which the implementation protocol will deal with those the issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG. Fayel, I'm going to allow you to do the last presentation.
Okay. For sure, when we're compiling this bill, you have been doing a lot of research, and I just want to know, according to research that has been done, which port of entry do you think is going to give you an extra job that makes you sleepless night when you think about it? Which port of entry is that? There are a lot. But there's one that you think, hey, something has to be done here. Which one of those?
Sleep at night.
Very interesting.
In the order of priority, number one being Bice Bridge, and number two being Lebombo. We have problems with Maseru, but it's a manageable problem. But those two are our biggest.
Thank you, DG, and thank your team as well, you know, for your input. But I think, as I said earlier, that we are going to have another session with the department, especially looking at the stakeholder comments that we've received on the bill and the department's responses to those comments. And our members, why I'm raising that is because in light of our resolution in the House yesterday, we're going to take off where the previous committee left the ball.
This is just a process for us to get up to speed. As a committee in the 6th Parliament, so that we get up to speed with what the former committee did, and we're able to then take these processes forward. That's why, DJ, I want to thank you for your input, but I think, you know, in terms of your engagements with the other government departments, I think this has been an issue of the previous committee, and I think going forward, in as much as you have given us certain progress, we're glad that Treasury and yourself have found each other, especially around the customs and excise duties. But you mentioned you have a written agreement with SAPS. I think we would like to know what exactly is in that agreement. And even as we're going to be meeting with SAPS going forward as well, we will probably get that information from them. But I think in terms of the spirit of the bill, obviously you want to manage ports of entry. But the thing of the airstrips, I think it's something that should be of concern to the department. And I think that engagement with the Department of Transport is also quite key. And I think when we meet next as well, we would appreciate that we get some kind of progress around that matter. I'm just trying to also manage time a bit, DG, and the fact that I think not next week, but the following week, there is a possibility that we would expect the department to come back on the bill to give us further, to take us on board in terms of their responses to stakeholder engagement. I'm not sure whether, I think, DG, that's quite clear in terms of where we're going to go with where we are in the current process. And we'd appreciate that in the next briefing, the minister. Anyway, we would expect the minister to be present. I think I want to then declare this session on the Border Management Authority Bill closed for now. We'll take a 2-minute leg stretch and then carry on with the Civil Union Bill. I would imagine the department would want to remain for that. I'm not sure. But after 2 minutes, I'll see what remains. There were some members who were not present there, but it is a relatively short poll because it's dealing with an amendment. And I think, it shouldn't take us very long, also in terms of the presentation. Ms. Bikash, I'm used to calling you Nolatando, so... I think let me hand over to you so you can make that presentation, and then we'll engage on the podcast.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, everyone. I will be doing the presentation on the Civil Union Amendment Bill, which is a bill that seeks to repeal Section 6 of the Civil Union Act. Section 6 of the Civil Union Act currently provides that a marriage officer... Section 6 of the Civil Union Act currently provides that a marriage officer, other than a marriage officer referred to in Section 5, the marriage officer referred to in Section 5 is a marriage officer who is a marriage officer because he or she is a religious leader. So the Act currently provides that a marriage officer other than that marriage officer may in writing inform the minister that he or she objects on the grounds of conscience, religion and belief to solemnize a civil union between persons of the same sex, whereupon that marriage officer shall not be compelled to solemnize a civil union. The effect of this provision is that civil servants who are in the employ of the state may refuse to solemnize civil union between same-sex couples. In the case of a civil marriage, that is a marriage between a female and a male, Marriages Act provides that a marriage officer must solemnize all marriages placed before him or her and is not allowed to refuse to solemnize on the grounds of conscience, religion or belief. This means that if a person is employed by the Department of Home Affairs as a marriage officer, that person cannot refuse to marry me and my partner on the grounds of, for instance, I am Muslim and my partner is Jewish. But in terms of the Civil Union Act, the same marriage officer can refuse to marry same-sex couples. The right to religion, which is one of the competing rights in this instance, is found in Section 15 of the Constitution. I will not read what the right says in the Constitution because it is there on my screen. That right is a fundamental right and it's a constitutional right. It is also entrenched in international law. Section 15, like any other right in the Constitution, is limited and could be limited in terms of Section 36 of the Constitution. I would also not read what Section 36 says because it's also up there on my presentation. This is how the courts have interpreted the right in Section 15 of the Constitution. The courts have shown an inclination to avoid a limitation clause analysis of this right where possible.
No, it's fine, Alexander. I think I gave you a directive to take members through. But I think because the important thing about this will is the principle of it. Maybe speak to that issue and then the actual amendment. And I think members would be on board.
Thank you, Chair. The principal issue, because even though this bill is a one-line bill, but there's a lot behind it, which is why I'm taking the members through why this this now the amendment, even though it was previously in the Act. So I'll just summarize to my presentation. In essence, the bill takes away the rights of officials who are in the employ of the state to refuse to solemnize civil sex marriages between same-sex couples. And also, the bill, there is second clause of the bill, which deals with the employees that currently have that exemption that was given to them in terms of Section 6 of the Civil Union Act. That clause says that the exemption will remain in place, and after 24 months after the bill has commenced, that right will be taken away. In other words, all civil servants will be required to marry same-sex couples, whether they have applied for exemption before or not, going forward. That is basically what the bill does. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you. And why I'm smiling is because we've already been through this process, and I hope members who were not present caught the essence of what was presented. I'll now open it up for honourable members if you want to ask any questions of clarity, because even then I know when it was presented previously it was quite clear. any member wants to ask a follow-up question? No? Okay. No, thank you. I think I saved you a lot of trouble as well. Okay. I think in that case, honourable members, we thank you, Nolisandu, for that presentation. Much appreciated. But I think we've dispensed with the second briefing as well as with the discussion around it. Our members must note that this bill has been referred to the committee. However, there has been no public engagement, public participation engagement on the bill. So in essence, as a committee, it's also a Section 75 bill. So in essence, we'll have to, as a committee, advertise for public comment and run with that process in terms of procedure. And I just, all members, we're in agreement with that. Okay, thank you.
I think we will then go on to the next aspect of the program. And Melitando, if you wish, you're welcome to excuse yourself as well as from Home Affairs. Thank you very much. All right, members, I think in terms of yesterday's resolution in the House, there are quite a few bills that are referred to the committee. We've already dealt with the IFED bill, and we also at that point agreed on the way forward, in that we did receive comments. Maybe I should ask Anthea just to summarize where we are with the other bills that we haven't dealt with today, and then we can just agree on the way forward, because some processes need to unfold while we are actually on oversight week as well. Anthea?
Thank you, Jefferson. The IFED bill, we received the initial briefing on the bill, and in the first parliament, the Select Committee had advertised that bill on electronic platforms between the 26th of October 2018 and then extended that deadline, in fact, to the 16th of November 2018. We had received 9 submissions, including 2 that were from individuals. We have summarized those submissions, and it's been handed over to the legal advisor, who then needs to come and basically talk through those submissions to us. Just also to mention, though, that a large part of those submissions fall outside of the ambit of the actual amendment in respect of the IFED bill. It was more in relation to the revision of the entire bill, which this committee is not considering.
Before you go on, I think on that note, on members of the IFED bill, at that time we had already agreed on the way forward, in that in the next session we would then get a close-by-close briefing by the legal advisor, especially in terms of the two substantive comments that we received from those stakeholders as well. So I just wanted to put it on record again, because I think when we dealt with the IFED bill, it was also before the actual process of referral took place in the House yesterday. So I just need agreement from members on that. The agreement. Okay, thank you. Anthea, you may go on. Thank you. You may go on to the next one.
Thank you, Chair. If it's in order with you, the traditional court, Ali Fugashwan, I think he's coming over to discuss this, Section 76. Okay. Then moving on to the Child Justice Amendment Bill. So in the last Parliament, this bill had also been referred to our committee, and the bill was then advertised for comments also on electronic platforms from the 5th of February 2019 to the 1st of March 2019. We received 2 submissions on that bill, one from the Centre for Child Law and one from an individual, Mr. Riedling. Just to mention, though, to members that on this particular bill, almost all of the comments that have been made in these submissions were already addressed at the PC deliberation phase. The only outstanding issue was one of the submissions from the Child Law Center was around increasing the age of criminal capacity to 14. But as we had received that briefing from